and welcome to the latest edition of the FT Advisor podcast. This week's budget saw Chancellor Jeremy Hunt paint himself as tax cutter in chief as he attempted to revive the Conservative Party's fortunes ahead of the looming general election. We saw yet another cut in national insurance and the scrapping of non-dom status. We also saw the birth, much anticipated, of the British ISA. I'm Damien Fantato, deputy editor of FT Advisor, and with me today are Matthew Todd, associate director at RSM UK, Eleanor Ingleby, head of high net worth at Atomos, and Claire Trott, director of Technical Connection. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
So, as I mentioned, Jeremy Hunt referred to himself repeatedly as a tax cutter, and his party as the party of low taxes. The tax take is at an all time high, approaching an all time high. Matthew, to what extent does today's announcement bear out that what he says about himself being a tax cutter?
I suppose, you know, a second cut in national insurance in sort of a 6-month window. So that's national insurance contributions, the main rate will have dropped by 4 percentage points between now and the end of last year. That is a quite considerable cut. But I suppose it's worth noting that the reason you can probably afford this cut is because the stealth tax from freezing the tax allowances and tax rate bans have increased the tax receipts so much. So yes, this is a cut for working people. However, pensioners and lower earners are not seeing any benefit, or not particularly much benefit, and may actually be worse off despite Jeremy's narrative.
Mm-hmm. Eleanor, you were nodding when Matt mentioned the frozen allowances, which have been frozen for quite some time now, haven't they?
We really noticed them, and they cut into people's take-home kind of pay at the end of each year, a huge amount. So it's interesting he's trying to almost create this brand narrative of being the tax cutter whilst quietly and stealthily making sure he can afford it.
Mm, yeah. Claire, what about you?
Well, I think it didn't really feel like tax cuts, as the others have said, with the frozen allowances and the complexities. I think he used the word simplicity in a few places and then proceeded to explain things that sounded horribly complex to the average person on the street. So with complexity becomes confusion, and confusion, generally people are paying too much tax. So I think for me, it doesn't quite feel like the tax cutting headlines that were trailed.
Mm-hmm. Matt, you mentioned to me a little bit beforehand, obviously he's cut, as I mentioned in my intro, he's abolishing the non-dom status, which is a stealing one of Labour's policies. But this has implications for inheritance tax as well, doesn't it?
Yes, yeah, so the non-dom status for tax purposes, it covers income tax, capital gains tax and inheritance tax. So the announcements today were to transfer the income tax and capital gains tax system to a residency basis rather than linked to domicile. But in the footnotes the budget documents, there is a mention that IHT will need to be reformed in light of this. And it says no reform will be done before 6th of April 2025, so there's a year for them to figure it out. But that could be quite a comprehensive overhaul of the IHT system in the UK.
Yeah, but notable that that date is after a general election. Ellen, reforms to IHT, do you think that's welcome?
I think they've certainly been trying to test the waters on it for a while. You know, we are kind of pre-election here. We've certainly seen a few things thrown out that they've been trying to gauge the reaction from. But it hasn't made a huge amount of difference. There was a suggestion, a couple of months ago, of potentially slashing inheritance tax. But clearly not enough voters were receptive to it for them to actually bring it in.
Mm-hmm. And Claire, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think on the IHT thing, to say it was trailed, it's a hated tax, but the actual tax take on it isn't enormous. I just think the complexities around IHT and IHT planning would probably have had more knock-on effects and negatives to people who've planned well, taken good advice and done something about IHT, and might put them in positions where they can't get out of trusts, for example. That it could have actually been a negative by actually getting rid of a tax, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And Claire, just to stay with you for a little bit, on one of the reforms that was made was around furnished holiday lets, and you're something of an expert in pensions. I hope that's not stating the obvious, but this has an implication for pensions.
It does indeed, and it's something that generally we go, well, property income's not pensionable, so it's not a UK relevant earning because you're not doing something. But furnished holiday lets are actually excluded from it. So your income from that and furnished holiday lets businesses can be pensionable, and you can get tax relief on those. And so this will, you know, with the abolition of the regime in 2025, then we will probably start to see people thinking about, you know, do we need to reduce pension contributions? Will they need to reconsider what they're doing? Because you can't claim tax relief if you've got no income. And if that's your sole purpose, sole source of income, then they're going to have to reduce what they're paying in.
Mm-hmm. Bad times for those people moving to Cornwall to run a holiday lets business in their retirement.
Indeed.
Matt, you were nodding.
Yeah, so, I mean, the abolition of the FHL status for property tax purposes, so it comes in April 2025, but it's been pointed out a lot lately to me as a tax advisor, and I think in the press, that the FHL tax status is so advantaged in comparison to unincorporated landlords of general residential property on sort of short-haul tenancies, where they've been hammered by the interest, the restriction for tax relief on interest. So this is really interesting. The fact that FHL owners will have a little bit over a year means they might have time to plan for pension contributions. They've got time to sell the FHLs if the business would not make as much sense without this tax advantage status. So I'm thinking this could actually generate to sort of some tax receipts on the sale of businesses. And, you know, that the government might be banking on that maybe to get tax receipts up before the general election, maybe before another budget if tax receipts do go up.
Mm-hmm. And just again, he also abolished multiple dwellings relief for SDLT.
Yes,
which is a potential. We could have some impact for people potentially who are moving into transferring their properties to a corporate status.
Yes, so multiple dwellings relief was introduced quite a while ago, and that was to stop people being disadvantaged of going into transactions involving multiple dwellings. So for SDLT, you calculate the charge based on the aggregate consideration for all of the properties involved. And multiple dwellings relief said you can calculate the SDLT on the average value, so you're no worse off than someone buying several individual transactions than someone undertaking one larger transaction. Getting rid of that relief, which is being removed from the 1st of June, so there is still a window for people to claim it, that could really affect people that are considering incorporating the property portfolios, because that is a really valuable relief. And withdrawing that could leave them with no option maybe but to sell up. And speaking of selling up, noting that they're also reducing the highest rate of capital gains tax on residential property gains from 28% to 24% from 6th of April this year is very interesting.
Mm. And how did all these sound to?
Yeah, I did read some commentary that suggested that was exactly their intention, was to actually generate more sales of property to gather the tax that way. It goes back to that kind of consideration of the stealth taxes that are creeping in, one drop here that encourages behaviour elsewhere that does actually generate more revenue.
Mm. I guess it also encourages more landlords to leave the rented sector, I guess. So, yes, not great for renters, I suppose. One of the big announcements, I suppose, was the launch of the British ISA. It's not technically an ISA; it's a £5,000 allowance on top of your ISA. This gives are you excited about recommending that your clients invest in all of these amazing UK equity funds?
I mean, we're excited for the additional allowance with the previous decreases we've seen in the capital gains allowance, dropping from 12,000 to 6,000 to then 3,000, clients are really struggling to make their taxable portfolios work for them. However, the only concern is if you look at the performance of UK equities over the past, say, 10 years, they have underperformed both global and particularly US equities. So you could potentially be gaining quite a large loss in performance compared to the knowing you only get the 20% capital gains tax. So it causes a very interesting dilemma. We also don't know how they're going to restrict it. Are you allowed to invest directly in UK equities, or are you going to have to go for a fund vehicle? We're not certain yet. They haven't clarified it. So it'd be interesting to learn more about it.
Yeah. I suppose, yeah, you have to choose whether you want to put your money into a poorly performing investment that is nonetheless subject to tax relief.
I mean, even if you took the last 10 years, say you took £5,000 and put that into, say, just something that tracks British equities, they went up around 66%, which sounds satisfying as a figure. But if you went into, say, global equities, you'd have gone up by around 219%. Mm. If you'd just gone into US equities, you would have gone up by 320%. Mm. So you look at those figures, there's a vast difference in them. Now, obviously, past performance is no indicator of future performance, but it certainly does raise questions for investors on how to use this new allowance as effectively as they can. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and to continue from the tax side of things, so ISAs exempt gains from a capital gains tax, but they also mean you can't claim capital losses. So if we've got, you know, we're in a recession now officially, if we've got a bad outlook for UK equities, then is this going to be the best move in the immediate future? And, you know, that's for investors and their advisors to decide, but it might not be as good as it sounds.
Interesting.
I think it's really worth considering just here that we do have a consultation period on this. And I think it's really worth people, advisors, investment advisors, reading through it and seeing the questions and trying to drive a product that's viable and sensible for investors. We've got until, I think, the 6th of June to actually respond to this. There's a good load of questions in there. And it's nice to not have a just completely defined product set. Outset, but you know, to have that option to decide whether it's direct equities or point in the direction of they should be funds. But as you say, I still think it'll be popular. But I think there was so much in this budget that was trying to encourage investments in the UK when it may or may not be the right thing for investors to do. There's even parts in pensions that are talking about that, and I think someone said it's we can lead the horse to water, we can't make it drink, and this is one of those, just trying to force the hand of people by giving them something to do it. So it's probably more of a stick than a carrot in this case.
Yes, I guess this is the thing, isn't it? Investors will always want to be in a portfolio that performs well rather than a portfolio that is draped in the Union Jack, I suppose. One of the other announcements, Claire, just to stay with you, is that he announced the increase in the income level at which people start being charged for receiving child benefit, which has gone up to £60,000. Claire, this is something of a hobby horse for you. Tell us a little bit about your thoughts on that.
Yeah, it is, because it's one of these random arbitrary taper levels. So we have various tapers with taxation, and the high income child benefit charge is one of those. It was 50,000 and it tapered through the next 10,000 down to getting nothing. And then you had, now they're putting it up to 60,000, tapering to 80,000 when you get nothing. So some more people will be able to actually claim this. And then the plan is in April 2026 to be able to do it under combined income, which is actually the real issue for me, is it was so unfair for people who had one person earning in the household and was losing child benefit versus two people earning 49,000, for example, and not losing child benefit. They could earn nearly 100 grand and not lose it, whereas a single person earning 60 would lose it its entirety. So it's good to bring it back to being fair. I personally think the abolition would have been much better, or just to tie in these limits with other limits that we've got, because we're just seeing lots and lots of it's sort of intermediate tax thresholds that impact different people in different circumstances. This one is a hobby horse of mine. I don't even have any kids, and I think it's massively unfair.
Yeah, Claire, I'm in the same boat as you, no kids, but you know, strongly disagree with the principles of the high income child benefit charge. I think it's worth noting that the threshold of £50,000 that's applied for the last 11 years hasn't changed in 11 years. So an increase of £60,000 does not cover inflation that period. It's quite some way off. And then the fact that the government are saying they're going to take 2 years to consult and then design the final product, which will hopefully measure the charge based on household income. You know, I think this charge, the high income child benefit itself, could have just been a means tested benefit from the start, and then it would never have ended up on the tax return as a charge. And because it has ended up on a tax return, and it's been so complicated and difficult for the layperson to understand, you've ended up with the tax charge plus penalties plus late payment interest, which has been a lot more hassle and a lot more than maybe the child benefit's been worth to working people.
Yeah, we should remember that you don't have to claim it. You can actually just tick the box to say, don't give me the money. So that's my other hobby horse, is the misunderstandings around these things. They make it too complex, and therefore people are being forced into doing tax returns when they don't need to. And we all hate a tax return. So, you know, if you don't need to do them, there are options. So, yeah, advice is key surrounding these things that should be so simple.
And to pick up on that, historically, if you disclaimed it the wrong way, you wouldn't get a state pension national insurance credit from having child benefit. But HMRC have confirmed in the sort of last few months that they will go back and revisit people that disclaim the benefit and ensure they do still get that state pension entitlement. So that's worth noting.
Yeah, I don't think that's coming until 2025. But yeah, it is something that's a real win for those people. And it should be for the last 11 years, hopefully, as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't have any children either, so we're potentially not a very representative panel to discuss this. Ellie, is this something that you find your clients coming up against often? Is this a change that you're welcoming?
I think it's more the complications, as you both indicated, as tax specialists. You see this a lot. And what we see with clients is almost the overwhelming, sometimes just lack of knowledge about what is then the right path to take. And it really does mean there's almost a misbalance of information. But it is definitely a challenging environment for clients, knowing, and as you said, with the various changes that can come in with the budgets, knowing what structures the right ones to put into place that aren't going to be undone by later budgets. Mm-hmm.
Well, those are just, I suppose, some of the more headline grabbing things that came out of this week's budget. I'm going to just ask you all to sort of summarise, broadly speaking, your thoughts about the budget, and maybe hoover up anything that we haven't necessarily touched on that you think our listeners should know about. Matt.
So, just from a tax perspective, obviously the VAT registration threshold was increased by a measly £5,000 to £90,000. So bearing in mind it hadn't been lifted for 7 years previously, I don't think that's got much benefit or really warrants much discussion, but it's worth noting. I think my summary is, I think it's basically a summary of what we've discussed, but a cut to the national insurance contributions, I think that's been funded by the stealth tax of freezing the allowances and maintaining all the other rates. High income child benefit charge, I feel like it's not enough has been done there, and it's too slow progress. I think people could benefit from faster resolution on that one. I don't think there's any reason it needs to take 2 years to be reformed. And then the property changes, I think, they to me suggest that this is a government trying to increase tax receipts in the short term. And I think it gives landlords some tax questions to think about.
Mm. Yeah, I think from my side, obviously the British ISA was the biggest moment. But really it goes back to making sure that if you are confused about anything, that you take advice, even from a wealth planner or financial management, to make sure that you are investing correctly, particularly given the volatility of the UK market and trying to find the right stocks or funds within that. One thing we didn't mention as well was the British Savings Bond, mm-hmm. Which was also launched in the same sentence. Not quite as exciting. We haven't seen what rate they're going to give on that yet, but we'll be intrigued to see more information about that come out.
Mm-hmm. Just on the British ISA, we've touched on it before. Do you imagine that you would suggest that your clients should use it?
I think we certainly look into it. We like to give the clients every opportunity to park their capital away from avoidable taxes. So I think it's certainly one to look at.
Mm. Okay, interesting. And Claire, what about you? How would you summarise this and any other thoughts that we haven't for the things we haven't touched on?
Yeah, a slightly damp squib, I think we'll go with. It didn't feel to me like the massive tax giveaway that we were promised and we probably expect in an election year. There's definitely some cases for planning here and just making sure that people are utilising all the appropriate allowances where they can. Particular shame that there wasn't anything more for pensioners who, with their fixed incomes generally, aren't going to make any benefit from the national insurance savings. We didn't really see anything there that, if they're getting income from dividends and things like that, it's not going to benefit them, which you'd have thought in this situation that there might be something there for the aging population to try and encourage them to vote. So it's just lots of little bits that probably all just stack up together just to think about what's the best thing to do for each and every client separately, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see. We may well get another budget before the year is out. We'll see. Thank you very much to my panelists for joining. Thank you for listening. And tune in again next week for the next edition of the FT Advisor podcast.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Coriant. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.